I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. So Super Tuesday is tomorrow, and the stakes are enormous for all the presidential candidates. The two front runners, Donald Trump for the Republicans, Hillary Clinton for the Democrats, are hoping for big wins in several states. If that happens, it could seriously damage their opponents. So we want to start the show today with an assessment of where Trump and Clinton stand on national security from someone who knows the subject pretty well. Retired General Michael Hayden served two presidents, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, in key national security posts. He directed both the National Security Agency and the Central Intelligence Agency, only person to do both, in fact. Hayden writes about it all in his new book, Playing to the Edge, American Intelligence in the Age of Terror. General Hayden, thanks for being with us. Let me just start with what's happening right now. What do you make of Donald Trump's comments that torture and waterboarding work in interrogations?
Yeah, look, first of all, you know, torture as a legal definition has a very narrow and specific meaning. But we are talking about the enhanced interrogation techniques that CIA used. Now, I've said in the past, I mean, pre-Trump, pre-campaign, that if any future president wants CIA to waterboard anybody, he better bring his own bucket because CIA officers aren't going to do it. And that's not a judgment on what happened in the past, Marco. Far from it. What happened between administrations going from our 43rd to our 44th president is that a lot of CIA officers felt that that kind of social contract they thought they had with their government and their nation was violated when they were, for want of a better word, kind of pushed out into the bus lane by the new administration, condemning what it was they had done for the previous administration as felonies. So they're just not going to go do that again. But when you get to candidate Trump, it's a bit different. He says he will do waterboarding and a lot worse, comma, because they deserve it. And that's the point that people like me really, really burp on. We didn't do this to anybody because they deserved it. We were not backward looking. We are not some sort of judicial process. We're an intelligence organization. This was always forward leaning. This was always done because we thought the detainee had life-saving information, not because we were mad at him because of something he had done in the past. And so candidate Trump's formulation just turns our world on its head, and therefore I think I and folks like me reject it.
You said President Obama threw those operatives under the bus and what they did. You still feel that way, even though the congressional report said this was a horrible thing?
It wasn't a congressional report. It was a report by the Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and it was matched by a report by the Republicans on the Senate Intelligence Committee that came to contrary conclusions and by a CIA rebuttal that came to contrary conclusions. Now, Marco, let's make one thing really clear here. I'm not here to defend torture or what anyone calls torture, but I did write the book in an effort to defend history and exactly what went on. And it is an entirely honorable position for someone to say, I don't want my nation doing those things. And honest men differ on that view. But we in the agency, our life experience tells us that we did get incredibly valuable information not otherwise available from these detainees through this program. So the sentence you've got to form is not that I oppose this and it didn't work anyway. It's I oppose this whether or not they do work. Now, that's a really honorable position, and that's the one I think that a lot of people might have.
I want to ask you about that in a moment in relation to the Apple case, but let's move on to Hillary Clinton first, just for balance. I mean, sure. Hillary Clinton's got a long record as Secretary of State, among other things. But this weekend and today in the New York Times, a deep dive into her push to get Muammar Gaddafi out of power in Libya. And the New York Times suggestion is that Hillary Clinton is more prone to acting in a crisis than to appear as if she's on the sidelines doing nothing. Does that worry you?
It doesn't worry me as a broad characteristic. It's probably no secret that I think we have been too inactive over the past 7 years. But, Margo, your description, the New York Times description of the Libyan intervention is consistent with what I've heard while being out of government, that the Secretary of State wanted to go do that. I actually at the time wrote, I don't think this is a really good idea. But again, honest men can differ. What you can't differ about is that you get to overthrow a dictator and then go home.
You're saying not enough was done before going into Libya to really figure out what could have been the consequences.
I think that's absolutely right. And by the way, if you look at Libya, if you knew a lot about it, you knew that this was going to be chaotic. And so you don't take that first step until you've thought through 3, 4, and 5.
I mean, that sounds very similar to Iraq and what a lot of people say about Iraq today.
it indeed does. And as I was saying it, the thought struck me as well.
So another thing about Secretary Clinton, she said she'd like government and the tech industry to work together on solving the privacy versus security dilemma. And that's just recently erupted again into a public battle between Apple and the FBI. What is your take on Apple refusing to create this backdoor for the government to get into this one particular iPhone belonging to this shooter in San Bernardino?
Yeah, and as you suggested and the former Secretary of State suggested, this is really complicated. But my bottom line, Marco, is I trend towards Apple on this, which might be surprising coming from a former director of the National Security Agency.
Yeah, it is surprising.
Well, you know, there are lots of arguments you can use here. Let me just kind of parse through them and then get to the one that I hug. There could be a legal argument. You know, can the government authorize this or not? And, you know, there are issues there. There's a privacy argument that and we don't want to empower the government to do certain things. Those are good arguments. They're really important arguments. They aren't mine. I don't have the background to claim expertise in any of them. I'm the security guy. And here's what may surprise you, Marco. I think through a security lens, on balance, America is safer with unbreakable end-to-end encryption with no provisions for exceptional access by the federal government. Now, for the last 2 or 3 years, Jim Clapper, the director of national intelligence, in his worldwide threat briefing, says the most serious threat to the United States right now is cyber attack. And so if you step back from this, and Lord knows these are tough questions, but if you step back, what it is the government is asking to do is to weaken our defenses against what the DNI says is our most serious threat in order to perform better over here against other quite serious threats too, terrorism and crime and things like that. So again, in my national security hat, I'm trending towards the Apple position.
You talk about this from the security angle, but security, as you've just sketched out, overlaps with privacy. So in this weird way, with Edward Snowden talking about the need for privacy, the FBI Apple case has kind of put you on the side of Snowden.
It puts me on the same side he came down on. He comes down on it for different reasons, and that's okay. I mean, you know, he's a serious man. I disagree with just about everything he said, but it doesn't mean that there isn't overlap. We've gotten to the same place, but we're coming from very different directions on this one issue.
Former NSA and CIA Director General Michael Hayden, you know, in your book, you talk about what you see as kind of the one silver lining of the Snowden business. And I quote, a broad cultural shift that is redefining legitimate secrecy, necessary transparency, and what constitutes consent of the governed. Are you saying, basically, Michael Hayden, that maybe it's time to say the government is spying and this is how they do it, like total transparency?
No, total is a big word. And so actually, Marco, so is transparency. I think I say in that same paragraph in the book, transparency may not work, but we need to be more translucent. And I'm not trying to be cute here. I'm actually suggesting that, you know, you look through a glass, the public can see the broad shapes and movements, not the fine print, because public knowledge of the fine print actually makes the fine print not worth reading, so to speak. Espionage is not something best done in public. But if we're going to do this in the future, the American people, frankly, are going to have to know more, at least broadly, about what we do as a nation. What I try to point out in the book, and what Snowden made clear, he didn't create this, by the way. I point out in the book, he is far more effect than cause. But there have been a change in cultural perceptions. And let me just dwell on this, Marco, because it's a very important point. When the metadata program, the 215 stuff, you know, your phone bill sitting up at Fort Meade became public,
right?
There was a pretty sharp outcry in the country. And NSA, and I'm long gone, okay, I'm out of government, 10 years from being director of NSA. But I could see NSA was back-footed, as you know, my British friends would say, because NSA said, no, wait a minute. No, we're cool here. The president has authorized it. Congress is aware. The committees oversee it. Congress has legislated it. And when required, the court has a say in what we do. And from NSA's point of view, that's the Madisonian trifecta. All three branches of government are saying good to go. And that, Marco, was the great compromise of the 1970s. Church Pike and the scandals of that era. We took something, espionage, that had been the exclusive province of the executive and moved it so that it had oversight from the other two branches of our government. By the way, just as a footnote, we're still the only Western democracy that does that. For everyone else, it's still the province of the executive. And so the contract was, look, you can't tell everybody, but the deal would be this would be legitimate and would have the consent of the governed because we would tell more of the governed's representatives in the other two branches of government. And the great discovery, you know, around 2007, 2008, and then fast forward to Snowden in 2011, is that a lot of my countrymen, a lot of Americans, now viewed what I just described to you, Marco, as consent of the governors, not consent of the governed. They were kind of saying, you may have told them, but you didn't tell me. That's a really big deal. And we need to come to some sort of consensus in this country as to how much we can make espionage more well known without making it not worth doing in the first place.
And yet Edward Snowden is not a household name in this country. And I think the general public, I don't know if you would agree with this, still seems to have troubles getting its head around what privacy in the digital age actually means. Do you think we are having the debate that is needed on privacy and surveillance that we need to be having?
Yeah, you've nailed it, Marco. It's just not what the government should or shouldn't know. It's the whole meaning of privacy in the modern era. I was doing a talk up in British Columbia on this, actually for the Provincial Privacy Commission, and someone asked me the question, what's your definition of privacy? And I said, privacy is the line we continually negotiate between ourselves as unique creatures of God and ourselves as social animals. And that negotiation is continuous. And where the line ought to be, Marco, is the product of the totality of circumstances in which we find ourselves. Even our Constitution doesn't protect us against search and seizure. It protects us against unreasonable search and seizure. And what constitutes reasonableness is a forever jump ball. And good people argue about where the line should precisely be.
General Michael Hayden, his new book is Playing to the Edge, American Intelligence in the Age of Terror. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marco.
General Hayden directed both the NSA and the CIA, serving two presidents between 1999 and 2009.